horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebeck.com. A very big weekend of racing on tap. Hey, Kay. Just for those interactive, you heard the beep. That was Casey saying good morning. Good morning, Case. Busy and full day. And, of course, we've got yesterday's news story that flashed across your timelines and across your broadcast news, if you were in SF, and at Golden Gate, the four-person chain of protesting that disrupted and delayed the card at Golden Gate. You know, we can touch on it here and there. Nick Tamaro actually had a series of five thoughts on Twitter that when we talked to Nick in the next half hour, next 40 minutes, I'll let Nick quickly sound off on it a little bit. Next week we'll get, you know, we'll get into it after, you know, after the racing coverage. To be honest, I don't think anybody's got any problem with the general interest of people who feel that equine sport is abusive to the equine athlete. I can understand that portion of the equation. Respect the right to, you know, protest and assemble and so forth. You know, the method used here, fairly sophisticated protest mechanism, but disrupting a private enterprise like this, you want to be out in front with signs and placards and, you know, draw attention. I mean, obviously, it's a stunt designed to get news coverage and to, you know, try to advance the cause of, disrupting an industry, eliminating an industry. You would think under the situation that certainly in San Francisco, a well-publicized homeless problem, widespread, that and acute, then under the pandemic issues. And in fact, this whole antic disrupted for several hours the vaccination site in the parking lot at Golden Gate Fields. You would think that those kinds of things would be a little bit more pressing. But as I've said before, these are people that think that they're speaking for the animal. Their empathy has transcended humanity, because that's, you know, that's it's amazing. It's a really bizarre mentality, but there it is. We'll deal with it next week, because I do not want to take away from a fabulous, particularly a fabulous Saturday of racing from New York to Florida to Arkansas to California. And a quick rundown of what's in store, because we're not going to actually, there's quite a few people that are pressed for time this morning, including Marty McGee. He's back. He's back and better than ever. Well, I guess that's debatable if he's recovered fully. But I'm just delighted we'll be able to talk to Marty. He's at Tampa, and we'll be on hand for the Tampa card. And so we'll get his opinions. And also, Marty is always the featured Derby Future coverage for the Daily Racing Form. So we'll get a little of that in, too. And I'm sure we'll revisit it later with Scully and DeRosa. We're going to do a Scully and Rosa round robin later in hour two as well. So we'll get their future wager thoughts. Don't forget, there's also the opportunity to hit the Oaks this weekend, too, and your Oaks Derby double. Speaking of Oaks Derby double, one of Gus Alonso's favorite bets all year long. We're going to get Gus in here. Gus is going to be at Tampa as well. And, of course, he lives in Fort Myers now, so it's not an easy, not a difficult trip. So going to get Gus in here for some opinions in hour three. We've got the troika of DRF corresponding beside Marty. Jay Privman, top of hour two, a lot for Jay to do. Jay will do his Derby watch, recapping some quick thoughts about last weekend, the two sons of Tappets, and Dave Groening in hour three. So we spread the DRF wealth. Hour one, hour two, hour three. Marty, Jay, and Dave later. As Dave called it, ooh, my Woody Stevens, the Woody Stevens preview visit. Yeah, but there's more to it because really the sequence in New York is fun. The Heavenly Prize and the Tom Fool, the Gotham, and the Busher. It's the Heavenly Prize and the Gotham that you've got to dig through to tie in with the last three stakes at Tampa, the Hillsborough, the Florida Oaks, and the Tampa Bay Derby. That's your cross-country pick five. Nick and I will go through that, too. And I think we got to hope that Florida Oaks, that we can tiptoe through there with the two favorites, to be honest, because the Hillsborough is problematic. And I mean, I got at least six in there that are eligible to win. And the Hillsborough is the first leg. So you got to get them all, but you got to get the first if you're going to get them all. The Tampa Bay Derby's a little curious. And by the way, for those of you, speaking of the curiosities that are involved in the Tampa Bay Derby, the horse from Puerto Rico that we touched on a little bit yesterday with Steve Haskin, I dug up his race at Camarero, and I just put it. It's on my Twitter feed, all right? And it's worth watching. It's worth watching. 7/8 debut, and he's a grinder. He's kind of a steady one-pace type, and he's okay, that horse. And he caught a wet track. You know, they say that there's definitely going to be some weather tomorrow in Tampa, but there's varying degrees of forecast for how much. So it might be able to get through tomorrow with, moderate. And I'm sure they're going to do everything they can to, get the races on the grass. I mean, without a doubt. I mean, there's three stakes, I think, on the grass, right? Yeah, the Columbia, the Oaks, and the Hillsborough. Then there's an allowance earlier on the card, that fourth race. There's a turf allowance. So I suppose if they got to ditch one, that'll be the one. So watch that. Watch Super Strong's race. He certainly finishes like another 300 yards is well within his scope. So if that helps you, I hope. I think you got to be a little defensive. He's a mystery horse. I think you got to be at least use him as a C, as a backup, or put a saver flyer on him. Just a thought. Who else? Jim Goodman. Jim Goodman's going to swing through. I told you yesterday or Wednesday that Jim was enjoying a couple days off and little vacation before the serious preparations set in for Keeneland. And so we'll get we'll get Jim to visit, because the Grade One gamble, you can sign up today, and I think it'll be worthwhile to reach out to Jim and hear from him today, because he'll tell you what the prospects are for you coming to Keeneland, and being in the building for the Grade One gamble. All right, so Jim Goodman with a visit. Papo will be here. Papo Morales. A number of you tuned in for the Twitch yesterday, and Tina had just gotten home, and we had to go do something, so I got drawn away, so I couldn't participate or even get a chance to watch it. But we'll do more of them, and I got a very nice response from a couple of people that they're taking a shine to Form to Win. So Papo and I'll handicap some races with Form to Win for the weekend. As well, we'll check in with Hammer, of course, as they got the Honeybee tomorrow at Oaklawn. And as they get, now after last weekend's action and getting rolling again at Hot Springs. And I think, is that it? Is that everybody? That's enough. That's enough. Oh, Rich Yang. We'll get Rich in. I want to get Rich with a couple of Santa Anita opinions as well. All right? So a full slate. And, in fact, let's reach out for Marty and get him in here because it's been an agonizing wait for while Marty has recovered. So we'll get him in, and we'll start the clock, as it were. I pretty much threw everything. I'll probably do some more fine tune work, and I left some of the maiden races a little bit off to the side to do a little added pedigree kinds of things. There's a couple of spots that, particularly that when it comes to Tampa, that Columbia, you got a number of those three-year-olds that are making turf debuts potentially. I mean, assuming they stay on. And so I did that pedigree work. But when it came to the maiden specials, and there's maiden specials kind of dotting lineup, especially at Santa Anita. And there are some fancy horses out there to be had. Don't forget also, while we wait for Marty, don't forget that you've got the hour-long show on Fox tomorrow, America's Day at the Races, and they're gonna jam in a lot of action, including the San Felipe 3:45 or 2:45 Pacific, 5:45 Eastern time. So they're gonna get I think the Heavenly Prize and the Gotham. Then they'll get from Tampa, they'll be able to get in the Derby, maybe show one of the others as a tape, perhaps, because the Florida Oaks, let's see, 45, the Florida Oaks goes off at 4:55. So maybe they'll show that on and anything else, and maybe some of the New York stuff as well on tape. Casey and Marty are straightening out a little bit of audio. Marty doesn't have the best reception, so just hang in here. And even though we can't do it today, we're going to start with it now that Marty is back and operating. I'll slip in the mention that Healthnetics is going to sponsor visits from Marty. And as I told you a couple of weeks ago, Marty introduced me to it and Jack Murray. And so we'll tell you about that, too. All right. I don't want to launch into anything, Case, if... Yeah. All right. I'll give the boys a minute to make that happen. Let's see. Here we go. Let's try it. Marty McGee, he's back and better than ever. Good morning.
Dick.
How you doing?
Good. I'm at the Safety Harbor Resort and Spa, about 15 minutes from Tampa, with my good friend Larry Horning, the retired trainer from Maryland. This has become an annual thing for him and for us. And, yeah, feeling good. My eyes almost healed. What it's been since late November that I was on with you, is that right? So that's been
yeah.
3 months layoff. I'm sharp and eager. Bring the open air outside box here.
Where the air is fresh and clear. We just certainly through January, I mean, the reports, I didn't really talk to you, but the reports were coming through. I mean, you had a COVID bout as well. And, it was like one thing after another here for the last 3 months.
Yeah, my girlfriend Alicia and I both had COVID starting roughly early to mid-December till so I had my eye operation on January 12th, and that was they had made all kinds of preparations to do their operation when I was still COVID positive, but I happened to test negative that day, so I've been negative ever since. So we both have the golden ticket. My only symptom was the smell factor. You can't smell, but it really hasn't come back 100%. But overall, I'm feeling better and. I only went to Gulfstream 4 times, once Pegasus week and then Pegasus and then once Fountain of Youth week and Fountain of Youth. And those were the 4 times. Otherwise, it's just so fun to walk around half blind and, not feeling that good. I hate to talk about old people stuff, Nick, but it's a fact of life at this stage.
Well, they certainly, the audience has certainly heard from me when it came to the eye scenario. And, you had told me at the time, actually, that you had experienced, the similar. And then here's another, another preventive surgery to get out in front of, a potential tear. So I don't think even that's necessarily an age. It's a little bit age related. And the COVID, what are you going to do? I mean, that's cutting across every walk of life. So it wasn't a perfect summer, or winter, but it feels like you turned the corner now.
Yeah, we're coming out on the other side. We're going to stay till Florida Derby week, get back to open in plenty of time for Keeneland, and happy to hear that they're going to be entertaining fans there. We're rounding back into a sense of normalcy, I guess.
Well, certainly your coverage, whether it's what you're doing this week, and we got Derby Future and Oaks Future this weekend. In fact, let's start with that, and then we'll morph into your Derby watch work with Jay, and then we'll get to Tampa Bay Derby in the card. But some quick thoughts on Pool 4 Derby and the only opportunity to bet on the Oaks Future.
Well, this is kind of different the way they've done it. Number one, the Derby is early. It's May 1st, and they've kind of backed them up to where this is the first time they've ever had the 5. Of course, last year they had the 7 pools because of the postponement. But it had been 4 Derby pools. Now this is the 4th of 5. So my comparisons that I've always made through the years, I've really kind of been the only guy since 1999 to write for the forum about, in this manner. In terms of the future wager pools, but there was only 5 new names from Pool 3 to Pool 4, and at some point the field becomes passe, and bettors tend to focus in on the individual horses, such as Essential Quality, and I guess Life is Good if he runs as well as he's supposed to, and Greatest Honor. I mean, they are clearly... at this point, your 3 favorites, and I think the betting will reflect as much this week. As far as the Oaks, Joe Talamo with Clarier, they put out those names for me on Monday, Vic, and I swear I didn't recognize about a dozen of them. And I think that really, if you think about it, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, we had Vequist run terrible. Day out of the office, Tentham keeps telling me that he's going to work there and she's going to make it, but I'm skeptical. And then same with Dale with Girl Daddy. She was she was third, and she hasn't been back on the work tab. So you essentially we're starting out all over with these two-year-old fillies into three. So that's a way wide open kind of race right now.
Well, and there's still plenty of prep action to sort that out, and you do have the option of taking a swing at an Oaks Derby bet as well, and exactas in either pool. So there's certainly some options. Anybody in that new group, or anybody in the 30-1 or above range that you got an interest in?
I mean, not really. I mean, I'm pulling for Talamo with Clarier. I mean, she ran so good at Fairgrounds. I hope she runs good in the next one, and she'll be all set up.
How about on the boys' side, on the Derby side? Anything appeal to you?
You know, I really like Hidden Stash. I'm kind of tipping my mitt right here, but I really like him in this race here Saturday, and he'd be in the field, but it would be after the fact. The thing about the future for this weekend, if you bet today, unless you're betting on somebody who's not in action, you should wait to see how these races are run this weekend before you bet Saturday night or Sunday.
Well, and I'm just looking up and down the list of who's running this weekend, and you're looking at Candyman Rocket, Dream Shake, Freedom Fighter, Highly Motivated, Life is Good, Medina Spirit, Roman Centurion, The Great One, and, obviously all others. In terms of postscript of the ones that have run, and then looking ahead to things like the Rebel and the Louisiana Derby in coming weeks, who's out there? Caddo River, 15-1. Concert Tour, 20-1. Hot Rod Charlie, 30-1. Keep Me in Mind, who has been pretty well disturbed by everything that's gone on. Proxy, 20-1. A little intriguing.
Yeah, those numbers are they're pretty much matching up with our Derby Watch odds. The field kind of changes the math on it when you have the 24 as opposed to ours, where we're just assuming our 20 are in the race. But, I think we've got Essential Quality 7-2 and Greatest Honor 4-1 and Life is Good 6-1. They kind of have those two flip-flop, Greatest Honor and Life is Good, on the morning lines for the Futures Pool 4. But, you're splitting hairs.
Let's then take the future wager and morph into the Derby Watch conversation. And of course, you and Jay have had a few weeks now under the belt. There hasn't been a tremendous amount of movement. There's been some horses that have kind of fallen off, including Senior Buscador, who's got a little nick in him and unfortunately won't go forward, but some overall Derby Watch thoughts and some of the recent weeks, Marty, and things you've been impressed with?
Well, both Essential Quality and Greatest Honor, they were both terrific last weekend. So, they're in the deserving favorites roles. And as Jay would say, Life is Good. Life is Good now. It's his serve. So, he can, further entrench himself in the top three. Life is Good, his race that he won in the Sham really reminded me of Authentic in the Haskell last year. I don't know if you or anyone else has made mention of that, but it looked like he was really struggling the last furlong just to hold on, the way that Authentic fooled us all, the way he ran that race in the Haskell last year, and we kind of dismissed his ability to get a mile and a quarter. I'm just wondering how the race is going to shape up in the San Felipe in terms of whether or not he'll go to the lead again or not, because it seems like there's enough speed in there.
Well, let's dive in then and talk about Tampa and talk about the sequence, and let's start with the three-year-old feature and work our way backwards, Marty. And it sounded like you did tip your hand with Vicky Oliver, Rafi Bejarano, and Hidden Stash a little bit, trying to maybe move him up past Candyman Rocket.
Well, I saw on Twitter that both you and Nick Tamaro and now myself all like Hidden Stash. Maybe we're in trouble. I was a little bit taken aback. I was driving across Alligator Alley on Tuesday, and I thought, call Vicky Oliver. It was about 11:30, so I did. And I was kind of taken aback at how bullish she is on this colt. She really likes him a lot, so that, you know, naturally these trainers tend to persuade us to, you know, follow along sometimes. So his race in the Sam Davis, he did kind of let Candyman Rocket get away from him, but now he's got Bear Rhino back. I'm a big Bear Rhino fan from having watched him so many years in Kentucky, even before he went to Southern California and won like 30 riding titles. So he couldn't come for the Davis because of some COVID complications, but he's back on board for this one. Clearly, Candyman Rocket's the one to beat. The turn of foot he put on from like the 5/16th to the 8th hole won the race for him last out. I'm sure that Junior Alvarado would like to try and do something very similar on Saturday. But there's a number of newcomers and strangers in here, Steve, with the horse like King of Dreams, who, you know, his connections won this race last year with a 50-1 shot. You've got Todd in with Unbridled Honor, the Promise Keeper, who Louis Saez thought that to come over here and ride. And then Helium, I talked to Mark Cassie about him yesterday, and this horse would have had three races up to this. He was the favorite in the Gray Stakes on November 22nd, but they canceled the race because of weather at Woodbine. And Mark said he sent him down to Fairgrounds. He got hurt a little bit, wrenched an ankle. He's back in less than a week, and he's been working at both at Camden and then at Palmetto since. So it's really an interesting race. You got Dale sitting on go trying to rebound, and the horse you put on Twitter this morning won the Safi Trio, and that's super strong. Who looked pretty good winning first time out. It was actually a great one in Puerto Rico in his only prior attempt.
You mentioned Todd, and we should probably visit these two maiden winners because it's interestingly on a price basis 8-1 I think on Promise Keeper, yeah, and 20-1 on Unbridled Honor. Not that the line at Tampa has been super, elite accurate.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I helped him with this one a little bit. His name's Tommy Creole. He's a nice guy, trying. But he kind of consulted me on this. I thought 2-1. He was going to have Hidden Stash as low as 3-1. I thought that was a little tough. I was more like 5-1 or so. But I think his line's pretty good on this. Promise Keeper, you know, that was a pretty salty effort at Gulfstream when he won in the slot. And moreover, Todd, as we all know, really eyeballs this race. He's won it 6 times already. So clearly he merits respect.
Unbridled Honor, this is Mandy Pope and last out maiden winner. The one thing that he's got for going for him, I thought, style-wise, and also the fact that he broke his maiden on the surface, Marty, but style-wise, he's going to come from off the pace, and there's not a lot of participation that's going to work it that way. It feels like there's plenty of horses that are on or near the lead here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Julian Leperu comes in to ride him. By the way, Frank Lyons remains agent for Leperu and to Keeneland and Churchill and all the rest. So 15 years with Steve Bass is up. Steve was called me about that on my way over on Tuesday, and he, he's recovered from what was a really serious heart condition. He wants to work 2 or 3 more years or whatever, and, he had nothing but praise for Julian Leperu and what he did for his life.
Well, they had a long, long association. It's nice to hear that Steve's okay. That's a positive. Well, let me turn to, because I did make note. Let's turn to how you ended up. We know obviously that. Actually, no. I mean, you ended up putting Moonlight. No, that's Kenny Peck did that. You put Hidden Stash on top. Helium and Candyman Rocket. Those are the three that I, yeah, those are my three too. Yep.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, let's press backwards then and talk about the fillies that are together for this Florida Oaks. And I thought that this was an interesting group, Marty, because there's so many that are going to make the move to turf. And, obviously, domain expertise, the conversation starts there, and Todd with Jouster. But you do have some horses that are making you know, making the transition, and I was eager to see if I could figure some things out on horses like Be Sneaky and Flight to Shanghai.
Yeah, I mean, I thought both of these grass races, actually all three of the grass stakes, the Columbia and the Hillsboro and the Florida Oaks, really came up good. I don't know why it took them till 7 o'clock Wednesday night to get out the overnight. I guess they were waiting on filling the Challenger and maybe one of these other overnight races. Anyway, you know, Gray Motion has a couple of undefeated fillies in the Oaks. I thought Jouster's been terrific for Todd over at Gulfstream, but I've got Graham first and third with Mia Martina and Oyster Box sandwiching. Jouster, Domain Expertise is okay. You know, as great as Chad has been in recent years in these fillies and filly mare divisions on the grass, maybe not so much this time. She was an okay third over in the Swedish Chance, but I'm going to go with Graham in here with Mia Martina.
Interesting. There's a couple of, let me throw in a couple of the pedigree notes. And, you know, you mentioned Vicky Oliver. She and Bayerano are also trying with Hindsight, who scratched out of the race last week at Gulfstream for this spot and for a potential grass debut. What did she have to say about Hindsight?
Didn't ask.
Oh,
but I'm sure
right.
She would say something nice about her. Yeah, her training career. I was looking up her stats, and she's trained for 23 years. Of course, Phil, her husband, had a number of the horses for his father-in-law, G. Wise Humphrey. But she's won 6 graded stakes in her career. All 6 were grass races with fillies and mares. So this is kind of a change for her. But this, she goes back to her strength here with the horse you've mentioned.
Well, and Hindsight, from a, you know, just looking at that the dam, Devious Intent, she was more of a dirt horse. She won the Gardenia for Kellen Gorder. I know. And stats-wise, Oliver, this is not a great move for her. She's 0 for 17 the last 18 months with first turf. So I don't know. I mean, I was interested in this filly last week in the Devona Dale. Her presence here caught my eye. Then there's Be Sneaky, and here's Arno Delacour with the Suncoast runner-up. This is Leal, the Jacksons, an Into Mischief filly out of that. I'm sure you remember Bella Castani was a nice horse, and this comes from the family. A beautician. In fact, I think Bella Castani is beautician's sister, if I'm not mistaken. So there's, you know, there's some maybe more reason to believe there's some plus turf potential for Be Sneaky than anybody else in here. Although Flight to Shanghai for Jane Sabelli is going to have to stretch out and make a grass move, and is a half to World Peace, who was, I think had a little bit of turf success, and certainly comes out of a nice allowance race at Gulfstream, albeit at three quarters on the main.
Yeah, I mean, you can't pick them all, though, Vic.
Nope, I get it. I just want to make sure people are aware of some of these offbeat types. And, the Florida Oaks, not an easy spot. I thought maybe you could tiptoe through, but now you got me concerned about covering some other entities. Talk about the Hillsboro, and it feels like the main story in here is the horses to the inside. I thought the 1, 2, 3, 4 are your major players, and then you got to at least look outside to Proctor and Stidham.
Yeah, I agree. This Hillsboro is about as good of a filly mare grass race going long that they're going to run down here all winter. I'm talking about Gulfstream too, because you've got a filly like Magic Attitude, who not only won the Grade 1 Belmont Oaks as a favorite, but she was the beaten favorite in the QE2, and she's listed at 9-2 on the line. I was inclined to think she'd be 2-1 or less. There's a lot of good fillies in here, Steve. I mean, you got Counter Crisp on the ascent for Chad. You have on the outside with Micheline, who's my top pick for Stidham. I thought she was terrific in both the her dueling grounds wins and the runner-up finish behind Harvey's Little Goyle and the QE2. There's just a lot of options here. And I think ultimately that just because her reputation and her races last fall at three were so good that Magic Attitude will be the favorite with Leperoux, but it'll be lukewarm, and I'm just going to lean towards Stidham with a horse who ought to be a decent price. And again, that's Micheline number 11.
Well, and one of the parts of this discussion is that Magic Attitude, My Heart Belongs to Daddy, and La Signore, as well as Micheline, are all making seasonal debuts here. Heart Belongs to Daddy and La Signore are now 6-year-old mares. Magic Attitude and Micheline are 4-year-olds, and that gives from a recency, and experience. Seasonal experience, to me, Counterparty Risk and Proctor. This is a classic Proctor maneuver here. Morning Molly is going to be probably double digits, and all this filly does is win or finish second, and she's a mare now, actually, a 5-year-old, and she's coming off that Jersey Lily win at Sam Houston. I thought she was absolutely at the least a B.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even mention her in my advance, but she's never run bad on the grass, and I tend to like Molly horses because that's one of my daughter's names.
That's right. I love it. The other stakes to consider, we really can't adjourn, Marty, without you giving me a thought in the Challenger, because this race, I really stressed yesterday that there's some real positives here. You've got War Stopper, Modernist, and Let Me Know, 4-year-olds that any or all could end up kind of elbowing their way into the upper levels of the handicap division this year.
Well, we were supposed to get Taxon here, but he scratched from the Gulfstream Mile to run in this, and then Danny Gargan midweek told me that no, he's going to run instead of running for the 100 here, and the Challenger, he's going to run for 500 next Saturday in the Essex at Oaklawn. I think that maybe Tommy Creel missed the line here. I thought that Last Judgment, if you go back to a Sunshine Classic win, he might be really salty in here. I didn't really understand the fascination with Modernist.
No.
Even though he did win the Risen Star, but he's going to be at a huge disadvantage, I thought, off this long layoff and the fact that he's never really run those kind of buyer numbers. And, Billy might just be warming him up. Maybe this is the one they had to beg Bill Mott to go in. I don't know. This is why the overnight came out at 7 o'clock Wednesday night. But anyway, I thought the Last Judgment would probably be the favorite and would probably win.
I do want to ask what you did in the eighth, Marty, because for those that are going to play the late pick four, the pick four and pick five ends with the Tampa Bay Derby. There is a race after the Derby, the 12th, but it's not part of the big multi-sequence. So this eighth race, which is a 6.5 furlong, first level allowance, optional 16, I thought this was a problematic spot.
Yeah, probably. racing itself is problematic there. So, yeah, they're betting on these things. I went with a horse named Speeding Kid, and I'm looking it up right now.
Oh, yeah.
He's out there in the open air outside box, and looks like he'll stalk a long way. And if he's good enough, he's not. It's the third race of the swarm cycle after coming down here from CBY Canterbury. So, you got Wilmer up for Tony Wilson, and this is way wide open. I wouldn't necessarily rely on a favorite like Uncork the Bottle or Mr. Ankeny. I'd go a little deeper than them here.
And there's several different irksome properties involved. Gleishaw is okay, I think, with that Fire Marshal Bill, who likes to cash checks and likes to be in the money. And then there's a very strange horse I got to bring up. Last Promise, the 4. Here's a trainer, Chandradat Gabardhan, a guy that's been training about 8 or 9 years. He's 3-for-13 this year. In the rest of his career, he's 4-for-179.
Well, he figured it out. I think, you remember, there was a jockeying Paunchy Govardhan. I think he might have died, if I'm not mistaken, a number of years ago. But I think he came to Kentucky a little while, maybe in the 90s. I don't know. Just started
interesting.
Making these. Yeah.
Well, this horse...
Founder Dodd has figured it out, Steve.
Well, this horse is far from impossible. And is 10-1. I thought this for the pick four, pick five players, this is going to be a difficult spot. And I'll only include one more mention as we wrap up. Take a look at the sixth race. It's a 1.40 mile maiden special weight, and there's some interesting things going on in here, including Pletcher with a $550,000 team Valor named Untreated. There is Steve, who I like, who's a half to Trouble Kid, and there's a full brother of Leaban for Leal, Son of Thunder on the rail. So sixth race looks like it could be productive.
From Comcast and get the Wi-Fi in time tomorrow for all this racing.
Well, that should be the priority.
they don't. They haven't viewed it the same way so far, but I've not made my offer yet.
Well, at the worst, you'll watch on the phone. Nick, I just went over Tampa with Marty, and you know the focus has got to be. And I mentioned this yesterday to everybody, how difficult it's going to be to pick and choose where you want to play your big multi-sequences. I should mention, Santa Anita does have a force out of the Rainbow. I don't know what the pool is at, but I know that they've got a force out. There's difficulty. Tampa, that race I just mentioned to Marty, the eighth, it starts the pick four and it's the second leg of the pick five. So, and it's a sinkhole. And frankly, the races themselves are not, you know, the stake part of the sequence isn't easy. So I don't know where people are going to cast their lot.
Yeah, the stakes obviously they're pretty competitive outside of the Tampa Derby, I would say. I think that's more than likely for me would be a two horse race between Hidden Stash and Candyman Rocket. Given that Candyman Rocket obviously ran better than I wanted to give him credit for in his win in the Sam Davis, and Hidden Stash had a tough trip. You know, he was down on the inside much of the way. That's never the place to be at Tampa. He's got a lot of growing up to do, and he needs to do it quickly because he's a habitual late lead changer, if a lead changer at all. I'm hoping Bayerano getting back on will make a difference, but I think that's a spot where you can go too deep.
Fair enough. Well, let's do this then. Let's focus on the cross country, and then maybe we'll grab a little something elsewhere. The Tampa Bay Derby closes things out. Let's go to the front end, talk about the Hillsboro, which starts the cross country.
Yeah, it's a good running, and this is a very solid field coming together. You've got Grade 1 caliber horses, including Grade 1 winners. And, you know, I think it's a matter of sorting through them. I don't know exactly how to handle Magic Attitude. I think she's nice, and I thought she ran well in the Belmont Oaks. I don't want to hold the QE2 against her too badly because she was coming back somewhat quickly. The Keeneland turf in the fall can get a little difficult to close. I'll tell you this, Arnaud Delacour is 32% with turf routers off 100 to 200-day layoffs with a 363 ROI. So this really hits him between the eyes in terms of what he likes to do preparation-wise, and she should get a great trip stalking on the inside. I think outside of her, I'd be inclined to use Miss Tehran, who, if you haven't watched her last start, do it. It's one of those where I think you can get a little too wrapped up in the way she reeled in the leader. She did have a very sweet trip to get to the spot where she got clear in upper stretch, but man, she flew home. She was very impressive in doing that, and I think the biggest worry with her are her gait issues because she's obviously a foreign horse that's not as familiar with the gait situation here, and she's had some difficulties getting out of the gate in the past, including in that Bobby Frankel when she failed as a 5-2 favorite. I think it's those two and Micheline. I have to use Micheline only because, I mean, she ran competitive races last year, including to close out her three-year-old campaign with that good runner-up finish in the QE2. She actually out-finished Magic Attitude. All three of them, to an extent, are a little bit vulnerable pace-wise. I'm not too worried, though. I think there's enough pace in there. I'm going to use those three and feel, I think, reasonably confident.
Wow. I got no problem including Miss Tehran. I thought, you know, between counterparty risk and La Signore and My Heart Belongs to Daddy and even Proctor, what about the Jersey Lily winner showing up in here? And that's a horse that does nothing but get into photos.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, tactically, she should get a good trip. I just think this is a much, much different brand of horse she's facing than she did at Sam Houston. As much as I'd like to see a Sam Houston alum succeed in a graded stake race, I think it might just be a little bit too much for her, but she should get a good trip up close to the pace. Counterparty risk, or as our beloved Richard Grunder called her last time, Canterbury risk, had an unbelievable trip last time. She, you know, she was 4-5. He's the gift that keeps on giving, truly. She was 4-5 in a race that had absolutely no speed on paper. So John Velasquez, who, of course, I mean, to me, you know, I've not always been the biggest John Velasquez fan, but when you want a guy on a 4-5 shot, it's absolutely him. He rode her forwardly, which was intelligent. She never really lost. She absolutely lost no ground. Ended up coming through a hole on the inside. You could have driven a tractor trailer through, and still was a little stretch to get the job done. So I just don't think counterparty risk is grade two or even potentially grade one caliber. And I think the three horses that I laid out are La Signore is a little bit more of the wild card. The problem with her is that she generally is at the mercy of the pace, and in a mile and an eighth race, that might just be a, you know, slightly more than moderate pace. I think she could get a little bit outfooted early, and that could put her in a tough spot. I'm also not certain a mile and an eighth is really her game. But those excuses, those reasons to be against her, really don't. They're somewhat hollow. And Brendan Walsh obviously is terrific off layoffs. He's done well with these types for years. So if I was to include her, I'd use her as a backup. I would just concentrate on the big three as A's.
Very good. So 1-8-11 as A's. Let's, you know, we'll stay at Tampa and then we'll go to New York. The Florida Oaks is the middle leg of the pick five, and this I thought was, you know, had a couple of major players, but then you got a lot of questions to answer, including at least three that are going to the turf for the first time.
Yeah, I thought this was a super difficult race. It really boiled down to how strongly you felt about Jouster potentially wiring this field. I mean, it looks on paper like there should be plenty of pace. And one thing I'll say about the riding colony at Tampa is that what it lacks in talent, it has in aggression. There are a lot of guys that get after it early, Hector Diaz being one of them. I would imagine he has to ride Be Sneaky forwardly to keep her honest. And it's a little bit of a give-up moving Be Sneaky to the turf because, of course, the dam is a half to both Red Ruby and Mo Tom. So you would have liked to see them maybe continue on the dirt. But I think it was made clear last time in running second to Curlin's Catch that she's probably not graded state caliber on the dirt. So why not try a spot like this? I sided with Mia Martina, who I don't have a great amount of confidence in. She had a wide trip last time and overcame a somewhat moderate pace. Irad was really getting after her around the turn. He was flagging her left-handed with about 3 furlongs to go. And she eventually kicked it in. She might just be a filly that's improving with each passing start and will probably benefit from staying at the mile and a 16th and getting a little bit of pace to run at. I would have to use Jouster. I don't have the courage to be against her, given her tremendous early speed. And then, you know, I think the other horses that you have to strongly consider are Domain Expertise and Oyster Box. Oyster Box won it got a relatively weak buyer speed figure, but won a race nicely at Tampa that I guess could be considered a prep for this. This, of course, is a Judmont horse that there was a leasing arrangement made so that it looks like a Judmont that was sold, but Gainsway actually had a share of Starformer. So this is a horse, I think, with talent and with some upside. Same with Domain Expertise, who was a little wide last time. Kun Lima came back and ended up winning via disqualification. So those would seem to be the four to me, and everybody else would just be a backup.
2, 3, 10, 11. We'll revisit that after we look at the two aqueduct legs, and the eighth and the ninth comprise the second and fourth leg, and the Heavenly Prize is that middle second leg. What are we doing in there?
I think this is a tricky race, you know, and I, of course, our friend, our mutual friend Marshall Graham has Portal Creek running, and he was asking me earlier in the week a little bit about some of the horses that were going to be in there, and obviously Gone Glimmering and Thankful are talented horses. I think you can certainly say the same thing about Lake Avenue, who there was a little bit of uncertainty about whether she would show up. She was very impressive in that win last time out at Gulfstream, and you know, we all waited for Lake Avenue throughout 2020 to run back to that big Demoiselle performance where, you know, it ended up looking like it was a bit of a fluke, and she underperformed one race after another. I think she was done a little bit of a disservice on multiple occasions by her rider. I think that the one-turn situation is going to be best for Lake Avenue. So she's a horse that I think people are going to end up leaning on, figuring that if she was able to overcome a bad break and a slow pace last time and still win like she did, this is a horse with a lot of talent. So I could see really only going too deep there with her and Thankful. I think they kind of tower over everybody else. But at the same time, you know, Portal Creek is a horse that's going to be ridden aggressively. She has to be on the lead. She was involved in a very hot pace in the Interboro last time that really came apart. Bella Aurora came up the inside to win from way out of it at a huge price. I would include her as an underneath type and just go with the two A's.
So 2 and 8 with a little 5, maybe as a backup. That takes us to the Gotham. And this race came together okay. You got some interesting mix, and you got horses that, you know, probably aren't going to go beyond a one turn mile anytime soon, and then you got some that might continue on and likely to continue on, and certainly that's the goal for a horse like Highly Motivated. But I think Capo Kane getting back to the one turn mile, very dangerous in here. And then you got Baffert showing up with Freedom Fighter, who I think is going to be over bet. Doug O'Neill takes the blinkers off, Wipe the Slate. We talked about him the other day. And I think that he's a horse that benefits from the configuration.
Yeah, I mean, to me, what this race boils down to is whether Highly Motivated runs back to the Nyquist. And if you want to use, obviously it was a race that was run 4 months ago, but if you want to use subsequent performances from the balance of that field as an indicator, boy, it looks like it holds up speed figure-wise. I mean, Quick Tempo came back, matched his figure. Roderick came back, 7-point improvement. Awesome Jerry came back, 4-point improvement, then a 10-point improvement. So Wellington came back to win, improved by 2 points, improved by 7 points after that. I mean, it just looks like a tremendously live race. And in going back and watching the replay, it seemed on Friday of Breeders' Cup weekend like you wanted to be towards the inside. Highly Motivated did get a very good trip along the inside before angling out. He ripped those horses' faces off. I mean, he showed what I thought would be graded stake caliber ability in that performance. And I think he's very, very going to be very, very tough to beat. The mile should really be ideal for him. This has been the plan all along. Obviously, these connections have the luxury of already having a potential Derby horse and risk-taking who is kind of the opposite of Highly Motivated, because it seems like he wants to potentially run all day, whereas Highly Motivated ultimately might top out as a sprinter. But, I mean, you want to talk about a horse that faced quality two-year-olds throughout his two-year-old season. I mean, he beat Known Agenda in his second career start. Known Agenda, of course, is now back in the mix for Derby consideration. So I think it's going to take a lot to beat him. I think he should get a very good trip stalking off the speed that likely will come from Freedom Fighter and Weyburn. I'm glad you brought up Capo Kane. I think Capo Kane is dangerous. I think he ran actually a lot better in the Withers than it looks. The pace in there was hardly slow, given the speed of the track that day. And he grudgingly gave way. He actually turned for home looking like he might win. The mile and an eighth turned out to be a little bit far, but that race really fell apart late. So I thought Capo Kane ran very well. I would certainly be willing to include him as at least a backup. I think if you've got a bigger budget, you might want to include him as an A. But I do think that by all means, the race goes through Highly Motivated.
What do we do with the Baffert Invader?
I mean, I think you have to use him probably as a backup. This is a horse that is fast. He's drawn outside. He's likely going to show speed and press whomever from the inside wants to take the initiative. But he has a lot of quality, and obviously everything that this barn sends to New York, you want to give extra consideration.
So the 3 with a little 6-7 backup. So here's what we've got, Nick. Here's the cross-country pick 5 in order. The 1-8-11 that starts things off in the Hillsboro. Then to the Heavenly Prize, the 2-8, maybe with the 5 as a backup on your backup play. Then 2-3-10-11 in the third leg, the Florida Oaks. We come back to New York, really heavily leaning on Highly Motivated, the 3 with a little 6-7 as a backup opportunity. And then the 3-8 in the Tampa Bay Derby, really the two, you know, the two obvious principles in Candyman and Hidden Stash.
That's how it looks for me. It's you know, it should be a fun sequence. I think it's one where you can get a little bold when you want to. And it gives you good opportunities. I heard you talking with Marty about a couple of the races in the pick 5 at Tampa itself that aren't stakes. And I actually picked that Last Promise, the Chandra Dodd Goberdon, in the eighth race. It was a total minefield, as you said, but I figured that was going to be enough value. And there's actually been a couple, in following Tampa a little closer, there's been a couple of horses from that barn that improved, not necessarily off the claim or off a layoff or anything like that, but seemed to be ready to run. And I think with one of those generally low percentage type connections, you want to pay extra attention. So I thought that Last Promise was a little interesting, as is that three-year-old race where Untreated goes first time for Todd Pletcher. This horse was in the Paul Pompa dispersal and was actually bought for $300,000 in the dispersal. People who follow Gulfstream will remember he was bet down to 4-5 on debut back on January 9th because he had B-plus workouts from the DRF Clocker's report, and he just didn't run a step. But one of the things that the Clocker report said going into that race is that he's a big, very broad type of horse, obviously a horse after my own heart. And you would think, in looking at that, that he'll benefit from extra ground. So Todd Pletcher, interestingly, 17-41 over the last 5 years in non-stakes races at Tampa on the dirt. He's got a very good record in stakes races as well, but one of the things you see on Sam Davis in Tampa Derby Day is that he will regularly send horses over for some of these non-stakes races that are ready to run, including Unbridled Honor, who's in the Tampa Derby, who broke his maiden last time out. So I'm interested to see how Untreated performs, and I think the extra ground's really going to do him some good.
I thought the four in there, that Oh Steve, that race was good for Lopez, and 10-1, I thought was a price to use. And you know, we should mention, I mentioned it in passing with Marty, but certainly you remember what War Stopper did for Rudy, in New York, and those three new four-year-olds, War Stopper, Let Me Know, and Modernist. It's kind of nice to see these horses kind of bubbling back to the surface. This comes in the Challenger, which goes early, the fifth race, 218, the first stake on the card from Oldsmar.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, War Stopper actually ran way better in his last race than it looks on paper. If you watch the replay or you look at the chart for that race, take a look at where the horses he was battling with early finished. And they were done before the far turn. So he completely buried them, took on a fresh Challenger in Mischief Afoot, who's a very quality Jimmy Toner horse, and held him off and really ran well. He's improved, I would say, slightly for Todd. He feels like a horse that's going to continue to get better with each passing start, and he should really be in control of the pace in that race. So if you're playing an early pick five, I think that's one you can lean on to round it out. He looks to me like a horse that's likely to go wire to wire.
Real quick, back to New York, the Busher and the Tom Fool.
Both interesting races. The Tom Fool looks loaded with speed, and I would certainly feel a decent level of confidence playing an off-the-pace type. You really, depending on scratches, but you really should have a battle in the opening stages. I don't see how you don't, especially if Pete's play call wants to show some speed from the inside. Share the Ride obviously benefited from a more aggressive ride last time. I don't know if I'm quite enough of a smartass to play Wendell Fong, but I want to. And I'm very, very intrigued by his ability from off the pace. So I'm going to go there. Hope that we get a decent enough price off a 99 buyer speed figure. I'm not sure that'll necessarily happen, but I thought that he was pretty interesting. And, you know, in the Busher, Miss Brazil, speed figure-wise, took a big step back in the Ruthless. She also rode a Gold Rail. So, I mean, this is a horse at 2-1 that you kind of want to be against. The way the Chad Brown dirt horses run in Florida, aren't you supposed to believe that Search Results is a horse with a lot of quality? I certainly have that opinion. I think I'm going to kind of focus on her and Mo Desserts. Mo Desserts also benefited from the same Gold Rail that Miss Brazil did, but Mo Desserts to me feels like a horse with a little bit more upside and is going to be a slightly better price. So that was where I'd go.
Very good. Nick, I'm going to let you jump, and I appreciate it. And you can catch up with Nick's New York tabs in the money. Daily when New York's running, and so take advantage of that. And Nick, looking forward to across the threshold photographs, the Tamaro family in the new abode.
Absolutely, can't wait. We're ready.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, NTAM 1215, and we'll probably do some recapping early next week with Nick too. Let's take the top of the hour break. Two breaks today, real quick. We'll come right back. Jay Privman is ahead, as is Hammer. We'll do some round robin with Scully and DeRosa. Gus is going to swing through this morning. We haven't heard from Gus in way too long. Dave Grenig. Jim Goodman's going to visit. We'll do give you a quick reminder about the Grade 1 gamble and how to make your arrangements to go to Keeneland. Papo Morales, he and I'll hit some formtowin.com suggestions. And Rich Eng, got to get Richie in here and get a couple of ideas from him for the Santa Anita card. But Jay Privman next will do Derby Watch. He'll give you some Gotham and Tampa Bay thoughts, Tampa Bay Derby thoughts, and then we'll hit the highlights of a fabulous day at the Great Race Place. Kilroe and Big Gap and just great. San Carlos and the San Felipe. Jay is next at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 38-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents